Stuttgart, das Tor ist leer. Alles oder nichts. Das komplette Fleisch ist aus dem Grill, auf dem Grill die Ecke kommt. Und er ist drin! Und er ist drin! Der absolute Wahnsinn! Der VfB Stuttgart bleibt in der ersten Fußball-Bundesliga. Schiebt sich vor.
Welcome to Valife-based Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English-language Valife-based Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. We are your hosts. I am Travis. You can reach me at Hasselfish. He is Matt, back from suspension or assignment. We're not sure which. You can reach him at SailRazor. Matt, when you were here, we were 0-2, and then we had David pop on, and not only did we go 1-0 against Dortmund in a dramatic match, he guaranteed the 3 points, too. I mean, should we Jim Harbaugh you to make this, you know, relevant to our American listeners and put you away for a bit, or should we invite you back to the fold? What should we do?
Should probably put me away, but not tell me about it until we're about to record.
Maybe we'll give you a Jimbo Fisher $75 million bonus too to leave. What do you think of that?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Here we go to some shout outs. We've got Valpe Bingo. Matt, the great Derek Ray almost got it all. He missed the most obvious one, though. Seiru to the Premier League. We were in the match of the day, Matt. This is kind of cool. We had Derek, we had Archie, and then we had Derek send out a tweet about, you know, how their crew is pretty small. And then Kevin Hatchard and Bundesliga Phil chimed in on that a little bit. It was awesome, too, because Moreno, who we usually despise quite a bit, the halftime analysis guy, he got Fritzl correct and gave Fritzl a lot of shout out. It was all over Twitter. I mean, what do you think about it? Was from Derek Ray to our buddy Moreno. It was just all Stuttgart all Saturday.
It was a top five match, which is what they drool over, because that's theoretically what would pull in the international audience. So we deserved the attention. I mean, we always do. Derek Ray always gives us, proper respect and does a phenomenal job. But we deserve it, damn it, from Derek and from the studio crew and everybody. We're third in the league.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are late to the show, darn it. But speaking of the show, Archie's sweater was getting a lot of love. What did you think of that colorful outfit?
It was a choice I would not have made myself, but kudos to him.
Pod predictions. I am sweet Jesus, Matt. I am awful. I went 1-8. Austin won again. He's 5-4. He's got an 8-game lead over you. You're in second place in this. The team that is not in second place is the Valpe Frauen. So I'm going to let you run off on this. How do they do this weekend?
The Frauen start their game and then they score. That's like every single time. I think it was 6 minutes in the most recent match. Scored immediately, and then it's like they kind of goof off for a little while, and then second half started, 45th minute, score. Just, it's insane. And then would they end up winning 4-5-1?
Yeah, so 5-0. Yeah.
These ladies just cannot stop scoring, and they do it immediately, and then it's like they toy with their opponent until they stop. My only thing that I don't like about the Frauen is that it's been impossible to find a video feed for what's going on. If anybody out there knows of a way for us to watch the Frauen in the US, drop us a line in the Twitter box, let us know. Because they're a lot of fun to follow, the live game feeds and stuff that I can see. And the Twitter crew is doing an awesome job letting us know what's going on. But it'd be a lot of fun to watch them live.
Yeah, they are 9-0. I believe it was FV Near.
Not gonna win the league this year
from the Muppets. Well, I don't know who it was, but Kopp got another two goals. Fleischmann, Tomasz, Buchlein, they're just rocking it. I think you are absolutely correct. That is an untapped market that if we could get that on TV, I bet a bunch of us would watch it. Speaking of kind of untapped market here, we got the former Val Bears. We got Luca Pfeiffer played 60 minutes in a Dortmund. I'm sorry, in a Dortmund, in a Darmstadt draw. Juan Pereira got one whole minute in Anza win. Omar scores. He played 76 minutes in Turkey. And Gildy Ask got 13 minutes in a Europa League win. I always love to kind of throw these guys who are on loan. I mean, I didn't talk about the old crew who are, you know, Sosa and Sasha and Endo, who started for Liverpool. But, you know, of the guys on loan, any of those ones that you follow or have a kind of a, I don't know, sweet spot for?
Is Gil still on the same team that he left us for?
He is. And I don't know if he would agree with you that he left us.
That's fair.
Yeah.
He's due to move sides again, though, right?
It's been 2023, almost half a season. He's been in Poland. So,
He's got to be getting antsy.
His agent is probably picking up some phone lines right now. The OFC Fantasy, Jens won again. He's now in second behind Village Footy, who's doing great. Give Village Footy a follow on Twitter. They do a great job with predictions. OFC Tippspiel, Peter from Valpy Omaha won. He's now in third place behind Stefan and Kai, so congratulations to all of them. OFC Watch Parties, we had Valpy Central Texas had theirs down in the Austin, Texas area, so congrats to Josh and Jens for that. Doug is talking about having a couple in December in Youngstown. I'm looking to have one in Cleveland in December for the Bremen match for Youngstown. And Peter, who we mentioned earlier in Omaha, is looking to get his group started up again in Nebraska. So he's looking to check some things out there. And I know there's a Colorado group as well that is looking to get some things started. So kind of excited that we're getting a lot of this regional, you know, OFC stuff going. You know, Michigan, got to be up there soon.
Yeah, as soon as I get a little bit of free time, we'll look at doing something here. I have a couple buddies who I know would be interested in going out. So if you're in the Southeast Michigan area, be on the lookout. But it is really exciting that you guys are getting to do stuff in Cleveland and in Youngstown and the Central Texas guys. And it's been extra neat, to me at least, to see the official club Twitter account retweeting you guys and giving you some added promotion. So it's cool that we're getting the attention of the big club over there in Stuttgart.
The other thing that was cool is the OFC man of the match, Matt. It was great to see Seiru back. I'm guessing you know which way the OFC voted on this, but who was your man of the match before we dive into the match itself, and then we'll reveal what the OFC voted?
My man of the match was Gregor Kobel.
Oh, man.
So many ways. Dude, he is the only reason this was not a like 4-5-1 absolute smackdown. He played out of his mind. And just have to give him some applause and some attention for that. Dortmund was in pieces. And I talked briefly to my Dortmund fan buddy, and he was not at all surprised at how the game went down. And he was also not at all surprised that Kobel kept them in it and also caused them the loss.
I was going to say, he was the man of the match both for them and for us, because
yeah,
both of those penalties were as obvious as they could have been, but he had so many just fantastic saves. I thought Moreno had a really funny line where the most active person on the Dortmund side of the pitch was Fritzl, because Fritzl thought the ball was going in all the time, but Dortmund and Gregor Kobel was stopping it there. The OFC man of the match was, not surprisingly, Seiru, but it was a 30% to 20% vote. Mittelstadt got his first runner-up award. I voted for Daxo in this one. I thought he was just cleaning up everything at the back, just towering above everybody. And there's not a lot of guys that can make Nicolas Sulla from Dortmund look small. I saw them walking off the pitch at the end of the match, and he did. So, speed of the match, Matt, why don't we do that? Let's dive right into Valpy Dortmund. All right, so what's cool about this, it was a direct rival on the table, like you mentioned, third place versus fourth place. Now all time, this is pretty wild. The record is 41 wins, 4 and 41 losses against. So this is as even Steven as you can get, which is considering the recent success of Dortmund and the recent lack of success of Stuttgart is kind of surprising, but that's pretty wild. You mentioned it 2 weeks ago that Dortmund is an enigmatic team. You just don't know what you're going to get. And I think that's what frustrates everybody about this club. You predicted Dortmund would fall to Stuttgart. So you predicted a Stuttgart win. Dave predicted and guaranteed a Stuttgart win. I was nervous about this. I predicted a Dortmund win in this one. I was worried about how they were blown out by Bayern the week before. I knew they had played the Champions League match against Newcastle, but they looked really good in that one. I predicted Dortmund in this one. I was very happy to be 100% wrong in this. Did your thoughts change going into the weekend, and maybe break down a little bit what your Dortmund buddy was talking about going into this? Because, yeah, this was a beatdown.
My thoughts didn't change going into the weekend. I was feeling like we had a really good opportunity. I feel like the team, after the loss that we had, the two in a row, that we were ready for a bounce back, and I didn't think Honus would let things get too out of control. And Dortmund has been really up and down this season. And what my Dortmund friend Felix was telling me is that, like, they can't get out of their own way, and they are finding ways to lose games that they should win. So they had us. We dominated this game. Let's just start there. Stuttgart dominated the play from the absolute, you know, first whistle until the end. But the opportunities they had and the chances that Kobel gave them in keeping them in the match, they didn't capitalize. But they didn't capitalize in stunning, dramatic fashion. Stuttgart missed opportunities by putting the ball right into Kobel.
Yeah.
Or by putting a shot just wide. Dortmund missed opportunities by, like, shooting themselves in the face with a paintball gun. It's just, it would be, his statement on it was that it would be funny if it weren't so sad. Mm. And I kind of get that. And I think the thing that gets a lot of American fans is we want to see anybody but Bayern win the league. And for the last 10 years, Dortmund's been the team with the best shot at doing that. And they consistently find a way to fail when they are on the verge of success. And it's like Felix said, it would be hilarious if it weren't so sad.
The thing that I find really bizarre about Dortmund is that we've talked about Derek Klasker and how, honestly, I think everybody on our program thinks it's a made up false rivalry. I just don't think it's real. But to your point, the last decade, Dortmund's been the one team that has routinely challenged for the top spot. But this match was an epitome of them. Is if you're the big dog, the underdog is going to come at you for 20 to 30 minutes and give everything they have. But since you're the better team, you need to absorb that, and you just need to put one chance away to put the game away. And that's what Bayern does all the time. And that's what it looked like Dortmund was going to do, because the first 30 minutes, this was one-way traffic, to quote Kicker. And then they got one opportunity and they put it away. And it's at that point where you're thinking, okay, a professional club like them, who is challenging for the title, this game is basically over at that point. They broke our spirits, but they didn't. And I don't know how much of that is on them versus us responding so well. So I kind of, the only thing I was really disappointed with the coverage this weekend was, I get it, a lot of it was on Dortmund and their struggles as opposed to our successes and how we just took it to them. So I kind of want to, let's jump into that narrative a little bit. So the lineup comes out, Stendel's still hurt, so Mittelstadt was in. The only really big surprise maybe was that Leveling was playing for Silas, but those two have been somewhat interchangeable, so maybe not. Enzo had a new haircut, so that was nice to see. He was, you know, back from whatever happened last week. We're not sure, so hopefully everything is okay with him. The good news for me that I thought with this lineup wasn't so much the lineup. I'm not a big Jamie Leveling fan at this point. I understand what he brings to the team in pressing and defense. What I was really excited about was to see our bench was stacked with Silas, Seiru, and Joshua back for the first time this season. Pause putting Enzo there. I was like, okay, we've got a shot at this thing, because that is a loaded group there. So any quick thoughts on the lineup?
Well, I want to just draw some attention to what you just said with those, the guys you mentioned on the bench, and that being a loaded lineup. And let's look at what we were at 4 months ago, where we were questioning the depth of this team and could we make it through the season? How many guys on our roster have stepped up, have played above their historic norms, and are giving us chances and making us feel like any one of them could be the guy on a weekend? That's awesome.
Yeah, it's wild because, and this gets into a question somebody asks later that we'll dive into, is with all the departures that took place, how is it this team is doing so well? And I kind of want to hold that thought because I think it's something really neat to dive into, the whole sum of the parts versus the whole or whatever the case may be. But let's talk about one of the things that has been consistent throughout this run, and that is Sebastian Honus and his coaching. When the game started, the thing that I noticed is just the pressing, the counter-pressing. We were on the gas. We were in fifth gear the entire match. I mean, Honus said afterwards that he knew that Dortmund was coming off the Newcastle match in the middle of the week, and they actually ended up playing the exact same 11 that they played in that match. So by accident, that kind of worked to our advantage because they looked tired. They did not look like they wanted to play the type of pressing game we were playing. So the first thing that I noticed was we were just pressing those guys. And there were times where Enzo was just sprinting up to Gregor and he had to kick it out of bounds because he couldn't get it to anybody. So let's talk about the game plan a little bit. I thought it was genius. I thought it was just brilliant to take it to them as opposed to the other way around.
Oh, totally. If you're going to sit back, we're not built to play bunker ball. I mean, that's not the roster we have. That's not the mentality the guys have. So if we had gone in thinking we would play bunker ball, we would have been in deep doo-doo from the get-go. But also going after a team that had just played a big match against a big club in Newcastle, that was the right move. And it took, 20 minutes, 30 minutes before Mats Hummels was tapping out because he was just gassed.
Right. Yeah, that's what it looked
like. That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully he's okay, but it looked exactly like you said. He was just winded there. So let's talk about kind of the next thing, which is that I tried to call it like bad luck versus resilience. I mean, Dortmund scores in the 36th minute off of nothing, right? We were up 9-0 at that point. Chris had missed a penalty kick. Enzo's body language wasn't so great because he wanted to take that kick, and Chris took the ball from him. Then Chris had another shot, you know, at 1-1 when it was about the 55th minute where he just didn't curl it well enough. It looked like Dortmund was going to get an own goal off of somebody's face, and the 60th minute didn't happen. Lavely had multiple chances, but then he had that great pass to Dennis, and Dennis was able to just very smartly put it away. Anton had a great header. Joshua had chances. But then Seiru was able to put just a beautiful penalty kick away. So I don't know how to wrap this up into a talking point as much as, you know, Kicker mentioned, like I said earlier, it was one-way traffic. And we missed so many chances. But we were still able to get the result. We were still able to be resilient and get the 3 points out of this. So was it bad luck, good luck, resilience? Or it's something you said a couple of weeks ago. Or are we just a good team at this point?
I think I'm leaning towards we're a good team right now. There is a lot of resilience. We've got a mentally tough team, I think, with a coach that promotes that attitude, which is not something we've had previously. The guys never gave up, but they didn't always play with like this, no, we got this kind of attitude. And I feel like we've got the never give up plus a little bit of we got this swagger. And that's what we were missing before. So I think we're a good team. We're resilient. And the guys believe. They're seeing that they can score. They can put points on the board. And they knew Jirasi's on the bench. So, you know, worst case, the magic is going to come on late at some point, and he's going to be fine and make it all better. And sure enough.
Yeah, I think my biggest thing while he was injured was I just was hoping that we would get some results without him so that swagger and confidence would be even greater, and it simply didn't happen. I mean, you can talk about the Pokal match, and that's fair. And the other games were close. It wasn't like we were out of them, but results are results, right? And there was just a different vibe when Seiru was on the pitch. And you could hear it in the stadium as well. That the thing that you mentioned that sticks with me is that we saw a lot of this the last 2 years, 3 years, really. The guys never gave up. No matter if it was Reno, Bruno, or Sebastian, they just never gave up. But you're right, and I don't know what the tangible kind of point is. There does seem to be this, hey, we're not going to give up, which they've never given up. But there's also that swagger of, we're not going to give up, but we know we're going to win. Like, it seemed like it was more hopeful in the past, where now it's more of an expected result, which I don't know who flipped the switch on these guys, but they do seem like their chests are out, a little bit more confident than they have been in the past.
I think the best thing to happen from this game is the thing that I had been hoping would happen previously was the Undav goal in the 42nd minute. Showing you can score against a good team like Dortmund without Gerassi. Even he's on the bench, okay, but he wasn't on the field. And we weren't playing up, you know, weight killing off time, and we took him off early because the game's in the bag. We're down. It's not even halftime yet. And Undav manages to bury one, which is what we've been waiting for. And I hope that his confidence gets up a little bit. I hope Enzo's confidence stays high. I feel like he's playing at a high level lately. But it's, I think you're right. It's that we got a little swagger, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll save the penalty kick question for later in the program, because that was a big talking point. And thank Fritzl Seiru was able to bury that. Let's get into we already talked about the goalkeeping a little bit, but let's get into the offense here. Seiru comes in and it's around the 60th minute or so, and just it seemed like immediately everything changed. In terms of just the build-up play, he wasn't even looking to score initially. He set up Joshua Wagnermann for two, you know, nice chances in the 75th and 78th minute. It was interesting. They said, this is a quote from Sebastian Hoeneß after the match, quote, if it had been decided in either direction, we would probably have refrained from making a substitution in order to avoid the residual risk, end quote. So he said that they played Seiru because they had to play Seiru. They actually didn't want to because of his thigh/hamstring situation there. But let's talk about the offense a little bit. I do like what you said, is that Enzo had that really nice pass to Silas, and Silas made the run that got the penalty kick. Then Lovely had that really nice pass to Undav earlier, and Undav had that opportunity. I mean, there were tons of opportunities there. But it was interesting because you could tell that when Seiru came on, he's still not 100%. And you could tell, the thing I found interesting is that the guys were trying to figure out how to play with him again. Like, some of the crosses were crosses to nowhere. Some of the passes, you could tell the communication just wasn't there right away. So it was awesome to see him back on. It seemed like there's still a little bit of work in progress to get everybody back on the same page, though.
Yeah, I think the if I was Hoeneß, I wouldn't have bought Gerassi on either if it hadn't been a tight game. I thought he looked fine. I didn't see any hesitance or any coming up lame or late or anything. I think the most interesting thing I thought with the substitutions and everything was the shift from the 4-4-2 to the 3-5-2. When I saw the first subs coming on, I was real confused about the guys coming off for him. Mm-hmm. And somebody, I was able to be on the Discord for the first time in quite a while. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys in the Discord immediately chimes in with, oh, we're shifting to a 3-5-2. And we've seen Hoeneß do this in the past as kind of a defensive mechanism where we're up and we're going to use this to sit back a little bit. But he deployed it this time in an offensive attacking way that was really interesting. And I feel like worked really, really well and freed up Gerassi to do a couple things and cause some havoc. And it's neat to see positive, proactive coaching and not be, you know, as much as we loved Reno, how often are we saying, why is he waiting to make a sub? Where is this guy at? What are we doing here? And instead to be seeing Hoeneß make a move and then go, oh, this is interesting. I don't fully understand yet, but then give it a couple minutes and go, oh, that's cool.
That's such an interesting point that I think we've missed, actually, is a lot of times we've seen coaches react rather than be proactive. And it does seem to your point that Honus is much more proactive in shifting formations to force whatever he wants to do upon the other group, as opposed to us reacting to what they're doing, you know, to us type of thing. So I think that's a great point. I do want to talk about that 3-5 move. I mean, you and I were texting about this earlier, is by moving Daxo to the middle, I made the comment to you that he was almost like the, I don't know if the quarterback is the right analogy, but almost like the offensive coordinator, because you could see, you can sort of see what Stuttgart wants to happen. Neubel takes forever to wait for the other team to come close to him so he can distribute the ball, and so that we have a numbers advantage going forward, you know, that we're forcing our system on them. And then Daxo distributing the ball in the back, it's amazing how this guy has gone from, I put it on Twitter, a meh sub last year to a yikes starter to a, oh my gosh, I can't imagine a starting 11 without him. And really a year. I mean, how quickly that transformation has happened for him. So whether it's Honus's system, whether it's just the defense and Daxo playing lights out in the back there, I don't know what's happening, but they were able to get Seiru to come on with 30 minutes left in the game and still get the result, as opposed to us having to have him, you know, for 90 minutes. So maybe my hope that this isn't just Team Seiru, you know, is becoming a reality, or, well, nah, we need Seiru. Never mind.
We need Seiru. We are a way more potent attacking force with him on the pitch, but we've shown that we're not a complete disaster without him. We can survive. We might not thrive, but we can survive. And Daxo in the middle, the one thing I saw about the lineup that really made me nervous was Anton was starting at right back. And we all know how I feel about Anton at right back. Did not love that move. But with Leveling playing ahead of him, I felt like there was no expectation that he was joining the offense. And so he was able to sit back more, and Zagadou occasionally would make runs up, and then Anton would shift over the middle, or Ito would make a run up and Anton and Zagadou would fill in behind him. So it made us kind of a left-handed team with Mittelstadt and Ito being more on the attacking side. But that's where Furich was too. And we've been driving a lot of offense through him since Seiru was out. So I think your analogy of the quarterback or the OC for Daxo makes a lot of sense, because he does seem to be calling the shots. And I think that's something Anton has been doing. And so it was just super noticeable that Zagadou was doing it, because it was not Anton. We're used to Anton being back there screaming and shouting at everybody. but it was also great to see that we have somebody else who can do that effectively. So yeah. If God forbid something happens to Anton, we're not hosed.
Yeah, it's a strange game to break down, because it was such a positive result for us. And it could have been just one of those classic frustrating Stuttgart matches where we dominate the game, yet we end up with 0 points, which is what we've seen for years and years. And for us to be on the other side of that, I mean, there's a lot of guys, like, I thought Daxo played lights out. I mean, we haven't talked about Angelo Stiller, who was just, you can't press the guy. He gets the ball out so quick. And Jamie Leveling, who was incredibly frustrating in the final third, I understand why he's out there. He is just a big dude. He's a fast dude. He is pressing and putting the other team into difficult positions. So I understand, you know, why he's out there. So there's a lot of guys that we're not really mentioning, because there was so much that happened in this game. I almost feel like we're missing so much to, you know, talking about, which is a great result. So, you know, as we wrap this up, is there any last shout outs you want to throw out there? Is there anything that we missed, you know, talking about some of these guys?
So somebody we haven't really mentioned was Mittelstadt. And when he came to Stuttgart, the rap sheet on him was basically, He was a less spectacular but slightly more complete Borna Sosa. Mm-hmm. So didn't have the lethal crosses, but did everything else maybe a little bit better than Sosa did. I thought he slotted right in at left back without issue, played very well, put in some decent crosses, but was just solid and sound and not somebody who I was worrying about at all during the game, which is the number one thing we want out of a defender. So nice to see him getting some playing time and having some success.
I thought he was going to be a Pascal Stenzel, Andreas Beck type, whereas he's good at his position because nobody plays that position. You know, the right back positions are kind of getting phased out a little bit. And that has been 100% incorrect. He plays gritty. He plays physical. His crosses aren't Borna Sosa great, but nobody's are. Yeah. But he also plays defense, which Borna doesn't. And so it kind of works out in the end. No, you're absolutely right. He played really well. Otta played well. It was a whole team effort. It wasn't just Team Seiru in this one, but it was awesome to get the result here. You know, the funny thing, too, is we were third place when this match happened. We were talking about how this two third place teams basically going at it. But at the end of the day, we're still third place. And as we look at the end of the weekend and we see the table, Leverkusen crushed Union Berlin. So I know you're happy about that because those guys have lost 13 in a row. Bayern beat up on Heidenheim. We won a close but convincing one. Leipzig just beat Freiburg. Those are your top four teams. I mean, and then Hoffenheim and Frankfurt, who were 6, 7, 5, 6, something like that. They just drew. So, I mean, I'm not even going to look at the bottom of the table. Sorry, Jeff, and all the Cologne fans out there. But, I mean, final thoughts on the week that was. We start in third place. We're going into the international break with a win, which is always awesome. We're still in third place. I mean, what's happening?
Pinch me.
I know.
Pinch me. That's it. It's just we would – if somebody had told us this at the beginning of the season, we had said, you're insane. Never going to happen. And it's just, we're doing it the right way and consistently. And even when we lose a game, like the last match we had, we play well. And it's one of those where you just go, well, yeah, that kind of sucked.
Yeah.
Nobody's freaking out and screaming about fire the coach or, you know, fire the entire team. This is amazing. This has been the most fun football season I think I've had since I started following Stuttgart. Maybe the year that we won the Zweite Liga was up on that because trophy and excitement and we're going back to the league, but this has just been unreal.
24 points. I think somebody posted on Twitter that we are 24 points with 6 games left before the halfway break. It took us 6 games before the end of the season last year to get 24 points. I mean, it's nuts to consider, you know, where we're at and how all this is going. The thing that I'm really excited about was getting this win gets us off the schneid a bit, because losing to Hoffenheim, losing to Heidenheim, if you look at Honus's record, he goes through streaks, and every coach goes through streaks, but his tend to be pretty extreme. A lot of wins, then a lot of losses. And I was worried after losing the last two Bundesliga matches, if we lose against Dortmund, okay, this is another streak that's happening. And so is Honus getting figured out? And then those questions start to come up about Seiru and all that. Getting this win, I think, is so huge, not just on the table, but for a lot of the psychology of people like you and I, but also I think the guys, the team, to show, hey, you know, we got this. And I think your point was very apt that they were able to draw even without Seiru, right? It was 1-1, mm-hmm. and he came on and he put away the finisher there. So, yeah, there's nothing here but a lot of happiness. Like you said, somebody don't pinch me. I don't want to get pinched. I'm happy where this is at. I'm not taking the red.
The win, absolutely. And the win helps with the narrative. Right. That's the narrative isn't, oh, Honus is going to fall apart now. The narrative is Stuttgart's going to be fine and they're still rolling. And that's a good narrative to carry into an international break.
I love the international break after a win, just like I love a lot of the news and headlines and questions we got. Matt, what do you think? Part three, you ready to go?
Let's roll.
All right, welcome back to part three, news, headlines, and questions. And Matt, I think we're going to let people on the inside of how this is made, because when we say welcome back, we actually mean it, because we have to take breaks in between our sessions because we don't have the wherewithal to afford an actual broadcasting system. So we have to be, I guess, held limited to whatever the platform we're using. So there are times when I say, hey, we'll be right back, and I actually mean it. We're back 10 minutes. So, Matt, did you enjoy your break?
You know, it wasn't as good or as long as the last one I took, but it was serviceable.
Well, that's good, because there's not much in the way of news and headlines here, which is usually good for Stuttgart, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. International play. That's the only big news headlines we have right now is Chris got a recall for the national team. Seiru, Silas, Hiroki, and Wu are all going for their national teams for World Cup qualifying. And then you got a number of under 21, under 19 players. So Enzo, Stergio, and Milosevic are playing for their countries over the international break. We do have the friendly versus, I think it's Nuremberg, on Thursday. So I'm looking for our trend of not losing to a Bundesliga 2 or below club to continue, but not much in the way of news and headlines. I mean, is that's probably good, but any of that stick out to you?
My only hope is that Seru doesn't play too much and doesn't re-aggravate his injury. Otherwise, it's neat to see our guys getting in with the national team, and it's nice to see Furich get recalled for another opportunity. So I thought he played well when he had the chance last time.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk of Anton getting a call up. Like I said, mentioned earlier, there's been a couple guys who are hurt and are not going to be able to play for the friendlies coming up for Germany. So, you know, Valdi might get that opportunity. That'd be pretty sweet.
He should. He's been one of the best center backs in the Bundesliga all season.
Yeah, so hopefully he gets a chance to play for his national team here soon, so we'll see, you know, how that goes. But you know what, usually it's no news is good news. So let's move on to some questions and comments. So we got Peter from Valpe, Omaha. He asks, any predictions on Stuttgart players making the German national team? Oh, great segue, Peter, for Euro 2024. Now, Dennis Undav went on one of the sports talk shows and he really wants to make the roster for the Euros in 2024. So Chris is nominated again. We just talked about Valdi, Anton. Of the roster, I mean, Joshua Wagnermann was up there last time. Do you think there's anybody on this club that could have a shot? I mean, is Dennis kind of a Hail Mary there?
I think Undav's a little bit of a long shot right now, just because he's not been consistent and he's not shown that he can do it on his own. He's been reliant on Gerassi creating for him. So I think if he starts to step up a little bit more and has a little bit more success, he's got an opportunity. It's not like there aren't other guys on the national team that'll help create some chances for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would like to think he has a shot, just because the run he had at Brighton at the end of last year, and really he's done nothing but score with us being on there. He plays a unique style, so maybe he'll catch Nagelsmann's eye a little bit.
It is a little unfair to say he's not doing enough when the guy that we're comparing him to has been scoring at a record-setting pace in the league this year. So,
yeah.
And in reality, Undav's having a very nice season. He was the highest-rated player in the game last weekend, according to Fop Mob. So he's doing what he needs to do. It'd be nice if he put one or two more in the back of the net, but he's making the most of his opportunity.
Yeah, so it'd be cool to see if he could – boy, if he gets on that team, that means he's playing really well for us, so I'm all for it. Tim asks, first half against Dortmund was an awesome sight. You know, why did Chris take the penalty kick? As a striker, I feel Undav needs to step up and take it. We had so many scoring chances. Sorry. Gerasi is the MVP of the season. I don't think you need to apologize for that, Tim, at all. But let's get to the penalty kick talk. We mentioned this earlier in the program. It was the big thing. I was really surprised that Chris took it. And David and I talked about it last episode that his one penalty kick against Bayern did go in, but it was a dribbler that barely went in. I wanted Dennis to take it. I wanted him to get back on there. And I get there's a confidence issue, perhaps, if he missed it again. From what the broadcaster said is Enzo wanted it. And if you watch his body language after Chris misses it, and there's a little bit of a mess in the box, he definitely had a I told you so look to him. So if that moment happened again, and if Seiru was unavailable again, who's your pick to take it? Because I want Dennis back out there.
Either Dennis or Enzo. Wouldn't be nervous. That's not true. I'd be a little nervous if Milo was taking it, but not super nervous. And Furridge, yeah, both opportunities he had, even the one that went in, was not inspiring. I'd be okay if he takes a break from PKs for a little while.
Yeah. So hopefully Seiru's healthy for a long time, because even though Gregor guessed the right way, he hit that in such a way that there's no way you're going to save that. It just, it doesn't matter if you guess the right way. Dave asks, Mittelstadt has been nothing but steady since he joined the team, as we mentioned earlier. So it's hard to call this a breakout game, but that's what I thought it was. I expect we're going to see Elvedi play from him for hopefully a long time. I like this question because it brings up two things. It's like, absolutely, he has looked great for the amount of money we spent on him and the impact he's had. So that kind of got me thinking about other unsung heroes. You know, Stenzel was it for a bit, right? But he's been on the club, you know, for a bit. I don't know if Neubel counts because we all expected him to be an upgrade and to be good, but he's played really well. Daxo, Stiller, which of the newbies has really stood out to you, or is Mittelstadt, you know, the easy answer?
I think Mittelstadt's kind of an easy answer. I think Stiller has been a bigger impact overall. And we can run with Daxo and Anton in the middle, put Stenzel out at right back, even though it's not ideal. And Ito can play left back too. So even if Mittelstadt's not in the left back spot, we can cover that. What Stiller is doing in the midfield, we don't have somebody else that can do what he's doing aside from Carazor. And the way we're set up right now, we need both of them out there doing it. So I think he'd be the biggest impact if we lost one of the newbies. And he's had the biggest impact, I think, joining the team of the new guys.
I 100% agree. I think Angelo Stiller is such an unsung hero at this club. And it's amazing how he was able to come in under short notice. The season had already started, and he just plug and play. And he's going. And I think he's allowed Enzo to just play offensively. Because if you remember, Enzo was playing all over the pitch. And we were all very happily surprised at the level of defense he could actually play for a guy that looked kind of slight. But having Angelo behind him, I think, allows Enzo to be much more creative up front. Which gets into this question that I absolutely love this question. I wish somebody would have taken credit for it. So I'm going to take credit for it. But it's, where were we when Endo, Dino, and Borna left? Were they somehow holding us back? Seiru was obviously a star, but I never expected this type of production after losing three key players. So that was a question sent in from the OFC. I think this is the biggest question, and I don't know what the answer is. We lost those three studs, right? And I think Borna's departure is easier to understand. You're like, okay, he played under Reno. He played that crossing system. That made sense. But losing Dino, and then especially Wataru Endo, and we haven't missed a beat, I think is bonkers. And I don't know what the answer is to this. I would love to get your thoughts on this, but how is it that this club is better after those three guys, and especially maybe the last two, are now gone?
So I think with Endo, and well, let's start with Endo. So I think a lot of the guys look to Endo as an answer for a lot of things. And he could do that. He was a safety blanket for the team. He was a safety blanket for us, the fans. And so a lot of the times balls were forced to him and he was asked to do a lot defensively and they even help out offensively. And we're just asking a whole lot of one dude with him. With Dinos, I think that we just loved his kind of reckless devil may care. Yeah, I'm going to run all the way down the pitch and do a thunder header in the middle of a game when we're down by two because I can. And then, of course, our wives loved when he ripped his shirt off. So I think with Borna, we saw before his departure that the team had kind of moved on from what he did. So that was obvious. I think with the other guys, there could have been too many of the current players who were looking to them to do a thing. And once they weren't there to do the thing, the Carrizores and the Zagadus and the Itos kind of went, oh, well, I guess I have to do that now. And if you get three or four guys that are all say, well, you know, Endo's not here anymore, Dino's not here anymore, I have to do that now. Now you've got three or four guys doing that thing instead of one or two guys. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing here. And it's a net positive on the team. I don't think we're at a Ewing theory situation, if you're familiar with that at all, where one guy is drawing so much attention that he causes the team around him to be worse. I think it's just that the younger guys were looking to the older guys for more help. And now they're spreading their wings and they're realizing that they can do it and they didn't need help. And it's unfortunate that it took Endo and Dinos leaving for us to see that, but it's fun to see it now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you brought up about how it's kind of the sum of the parts statement where you've got all these studs, but they just don't fit together especially well. I think Borna is the easy one to understand why, you know, everybody kind of moved on from that. We all love Borna. The Endo one to me is such a head scratcher because basically Angelo is playing his spot and doing it somewhat seamlessly. And I don't know if, I mean, Wataru's playing the Premier League. So that dude is obviously good. So I don't want to begrudge his skills at all. It's just so bonkers to me that we lost that much talent and that much money. And we're able to replace them on the cheap and do so much better. And maybe it's to what you said, is that it's simply the case of these players around them have matured age-wise. And so they've played a lot and now they know what they're expected to do. Maybe it could just be that these guys are more of a system team now, as opposed to a bunch of individuals that were surrounded. I don't know if we'll ever actually know the answer. I think it's wild that Angelo Stiller replaced Wataru Endo, basically. That did Daxo replace Dino, essentially? The middle shot replaced Borna, essentially? I mean, if I'm playing fantasy football, you know, I'm not going to take any of those three guys over the three guys that are gone. It's just, it's bonkers how team play, the intangible, fits into this so much, right? And I guess maybe that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah, I think if you made that switch, your FIFA team rating would not go up. but we're seeing just a sum of the parts is greater than, or the whole is greater than the sum of the parts situation. And I don't think Stiller is as good as Endo is. I don't. But he's doing the job he needs to do. He's unassuming, and nobody around him is looking for him to save the day. They just want him to do his job, and he's doing it. And the net benefit of that is huge. And we also, if you remember when Reno got fired, there was talk when his successor, who shall not be named, came in, that Reno kind of let the guys go out and do what they wanted to do on the pitch. And there was an overall kind of big picture idea, but there was a lot of like, go out and express yourself thing. And then the unspeakable times happened. And then Honus came in. And one of the things that was said about him is that the idea was that he would simplify things and bring things back to basics. And I feel like we're seeing more of a system team with simpler concepts than we had under Bruno or Reno. where Bruno is trying to force an ideology that didn't match the personnel, and Reno seemed to be more of a, I believe in you and you can do this and go do what you do out there from this spot I'm going to put you in. And I think with a younger team like we have, that's, it's beneficial having this system in place where it's like piece number three does job number three, and not like Ito does what he does, but I put him here. So it's going to be a little weird for everybody else.
Mm. Yeah. It's, I don't know if we'll ever know the answer to it, but it's working, and you know, I'll take that 100%. And one of the key guys that's making this work, and this goes to a question that Kai asked and that Dan asked, is it's a good feeling to go to the international break with a win, but Stuttgart's exploitation of their chances against Dortmund was really poor. It makes me afraid for the future, whether near or far. I know it's difficult, but I think we'll need a third thoroughbred striker as a backup. What do you think? And then Daniel sends in, you know, sad that we'll have to part with Guirassy in January. Can we use the time now to practice penalties now that the refs are finally awarding them to us, you know, asking for a friend? I think this brings up two things. The reason I put these two questions together is that I, based on the interview that we saw this weekend and then all the news, it seems like Seyru may depart in January. It's getting harder and harder to think this guy is going to stick around. So if that does happen, who steps in to replace him? Because to be quite honest, the games where he wasn't there reminded me of the pre-Seyru Reno times where we had all the chances in the world.
Yeah.
But none of them were converted. And so to Kai's question, is it simply Dennis Undav is the answer to that? Because if Seyru is out, what we've seen is we're still creating chances. But we're definitely not a top nine team. I don't think we're a bottom six team.
No.
I think we're in that weird middle area there. So throwing a lot at you here, but I mean, what do you think? Is there a Seyru doppelganger out there we can get? Or are we just hoping to ride this good streak till January and then see what happens?
I think the closest thing we could get to Seyru is this gentleman playing for Baron Munch, something or other, Harold Kane. Harold, but he's a poor, even he's a poor imitation. You know, and Kane costs what, 60 million euros for Bayern? It was something insane.
It was like 100 something. It was nuts.
Yeah, it's my brain cannot process that much money. So it doesn't matter how much it was. it's too much. I think if Guirassy leaves at the holiday break, we're in a little bit of trouble. The obvious answer is let's give Undav a chance to see what he can do, but I feel like you've got to use the Guirassy money to find reinforcements and bring somebody else in who can maybe finish a little bit better than Undav, can push Undav to be better. I'm really hopeful, and this may be super, super naive of me, but I'm really hopeful that Guirassy goes, I can get more. I'm in a place that I feel good about. My family's happy. This team is taking care of me. There's no questions about international duty or like devotion. The fans adore me. This is a good, healthy place for me to be. And he stays and finishes out the season. We get rid of this $15 million buyout clause and we sell him for $1 billion at the end of the season. And then he can walk around with the $1 billion man shirt on and we're set for the next two seasons and can afford to finish the renovations in MHP Arena.
Yeah. This goes to what somebody asked earlier. Also in the questions is like canonize our lucky charm David and our Lord and Savior Seyru. So yeah, they're trying to get the statues of both David and Seyru outside of the on shutter curve there, which would be great. Yeah, it's tough because you can't replace a guy who is having a generational run. I mean, he and Harry Kanai are setting records that haven't been seen before. So it's going to be impossible to place him, but I'm hopeful we can keep him through the year. I just want to get as many points as possible up until Christmas and then see what happens because with Seiru, and this gets to the next question. Balham asks, are Stuttgart in the title race? And then the next question is, it took 11 games, but I feel that we can beat any team. The only thing that can slow us down is injury or ineffective refereeing. That's not to say that we'll win all of our remaining games, but we have no reason to fear any team. That was said in, you know, by anonymously, but I don't agree with Balham that we are in the title race at all. I love the idea that we're in the top four, but to his point and to the point of the second question, I'm starting to get to that point where I don't fear anybody. I know our schedule in December is going to be November, December is going to be pretty brutal, but the way these guys are playing with that target guy up there, I think we can play with anybody. Now, granted, we haven't played the two big guys, but I still think we can play with anybody. Are you fearing anybody out there? Or are you starting to get a level of confidence now?
I don't fear other teams. I don't think if we had Leverkusen this weekend, we would not be favored. And I probably wouldn't pick Stuttgart to win. But I don't feel like we'd be blown off the pitch. Mm-hmm. I feel like we could hold our own against Leverkusen, against Bayern. You know, the counter argument to that is when we did face Red Bull, they blew us off the pitch and beat our heads in. But the team's gotten better over that time. We're playing smarter defensively. I think Bayern and Leverkusen could probably beat us, but I think we'd make them work for it. And that's really what I want from this team, is not necessarily to be a Champions League side. I want everybody to come in going, Stuttgart's going to be a tough match. And if we wind up mid-table, okay. But I want it to be competitive every game. And I feel like we've got a team that can do that right now.
I feel like we're a mid-table team without Seiru. But I feel with Seiru, we're a top, oh my gosh, we're a top seven team. I feel that we've got the talent to finish somewhere between 7 to 13 without him. But with him, I think we could get a 4 through 7 spot. Now, usually it's the same people every year, right? It's going to be Leverkusen. It's going to be Dortmund. It's going to be Munich. It's going to be Leipzig. Those are the ones. And then you got, you know, 3 or 4 other people, whether it's Hoffenheim, whether it's Frankfurt, fighting for those other spots. So maybe I'm being silly there, but I think over the course of 30 some matches, us holding on to a top three spot is going to be nigh impossible. But if Seiru is there for 30 some matches and most of these guys stay healthy, I can see us being definitely in the top 9 and then pushing for a 7-6-5 chance. I mean, and then doing exactly what you're worried about, freaking out because everybody's gone the next year, whether it's Seiru, Nubel, whoever. But to the question, do I fear any team? Like I said, the Bayern match and the Bayer match, those are the ones that are going to really tell us a lot about where we're at. But on the flip side, we've had a couple of matches that are already telling us where we're at. The Dortmund match is telling us where we're at. We played Freiburg really. So we're a good team. And I think that's a tough thing for all of us to swallow right now.
We're not used to it. We're used to waiting for the, looking up at the sole of the other shoe as it's dropping on our head before we've had a chance to appreciate anything. My one big worry is if Seiru does stay through the year and the plan is to sell him off in the summer, let's say we make Champions League, let's say we make Europa League, then what? How do we do that without a Seiru Girassi up front? And we're going to need more reinforcements. We're going to have a lot more games. We're going to need more help. So I could see team management. I hate this idea, but I could see team management saying, if we can capitalize and sell them at the winter break, then the likelihood that we stay in this Champions League, Europa League seat slips. And maybe that's a more realistic, you know, 7, 8, 9 would be an ideal finishing spot, because then we don't have European football to worry about next season. But I don't know. If I'm in their spot, I'm finding a way to try and keep Seiru Girassi.
Yes.
That's my number one job right now.
Yeah. And see if he if you can't keep him, see if you can keep his family there. See if you can get somebody. Maybe he's got a brother who can play. I don't know, but we need something. But no, to answer the question there is like, no, we fear nobody. This is the house that Konstadt built. We're fine here. So there we go. All right, Matt, let's move on to part four. What do you think?
Let's go.
All right, so Matt, we're in part four, and really, this is just a—I don't know if it's not a teaser; it's a trick. We don't have a part four, so Matt and I were talking. We're not going to look forward to the Bremen or the Frankfurt matches that are coming up after the international break. We're going to try to do a episode 100 where we call everybody who has been on the podcast back on and ask a couple questions, you know, here or there, just to do something. I'm sure it will be one of our least listened to podcasts ever. It has nothing to do with the game at all. But there's nothing here to talk about, Matt. It's just episode 100 is coming up. So there you go.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to the conversations. I feel like we've got a really good group of people that have been really fun to talk to and listen to. And hopefully the seven people who listen to this, who are all probably going to be on that episode, will at least download it. Even if you don't listen, download. So the Travis and I, when we look at the numbers, we feel a little bit less bad about ourselves. But yeah, I think it'll be fun. And we've said it before, and I'll say it again, the Twitter community, the communities on the Discord, interacting with you all is so much fun. It's the only thing that keeps me going back to that hell site that is Twitter. So I guess thanks. And also screw you.
Yeah, it's going to be I'm interested to look at the analytics after this episode to see what it tells us. Like, as soon as we said there's a part four, we're like, there is no part four. Just listening to us, how quickly it dies. But yeah, so we plan on doing something for episode 100 where we just chat with everybody. So if you have any questions that you would like us to ask them, you know, send them in, and we'll see if, you know, you can learn any insight into the magic that is America's number one and also only fan podcast. Descriptors are so fun. So
we're the best, and nobody can argue with us about it.
That's right. We finished first in our class of one. So we got that.
You can only play the teams on your schedule, Travis. It's not our fault. The competition sucks.
Well, it's funny. I actually asked the Dortmund podcast if they wanted to record, and they said yes, and I ghosted them. I was like, oh god, no, I didn't expect you to say yes. That's not what I want. So, no, sorry guys. All right, Matt, welcome back to the pod. Thanks for popping on. We'll talk to you next week for episode 100, and we'll learn, well, probably nothing, but
something. tune in to find out what we're gonna learn.
I should edit all this out.
That's called a teaser, Travis.
I'm going to keep it. That's what you get for listening this long, everybody. All right, everybody. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next time, Matt. We'll talk to you next time. And hopefully, usually I sign off with hopefully we'll talk after a big win, but there's no game. So I hope
everybody's national team does really well. How's that?
Let's go San Marino right here. All right, Matt, we'll talk to you next time.
See you, Travis.